Hey guys, this is Nikki.
This is Sam.
Welcome back to So What? What's Next?
I spent the bag on the bundle. Turn around and take a flip and make a double. Listen, baby, with me you ain't never got a struggle. I'm in the game, 650, catch a triple double. Watch it tumble, tumble, watch it tumble. Tumbling, 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 this is coming in, keep on tumbling. Watch it tumble, tumble, watch it tumble. Tumbling, tumbling, tumbling.
Guys, we have a great show planned for you today. Before we get into today's topic, we wanted to definitely thank you for patronizing the So What? What's Next pod. Your love online, your feedback and text messages, tweets, even in our DMs on Instagram have been nothing but positive. We thank you so much for, you know, subscribing. One of the things that Sam and I wanted to definitely share with you guys is that your feedback is monumental to us. And in order for us to be successful, you know, we want to make sure that we give you guys kudos and praise for, jumping on and listening to us talk about things that matter today that you won't care about tomorrow. But while we have you, if you could do us a favor, go ahead to your platform, whether it's Apple, Spotify, SoundCloud. If you could jump on to those platforms and subscribe, rate, leave a review. Also, if you could jump on YouTube and do the same, it's all under the same heading of So What, comma, What's Next. We greatly appreciate it. One of the things that's worked for me is when I wake up and have to send the top five messages out to my roster, I go ahead and share the link for the So What, What's Next pod. So, you know, I just want to give you a way to kind of start your day off good. If you need to send those good morning text messages to, you know, your top five, go ahead, share that link, and help us get some more listens out there.
Shouts out to you, Nikki, with the top five. I mean, six doesn't really matter. I like to have somebody on the bench every now and then, but...
You know, we all school T-Mobile over here. We got the top five.
Okay. All right. Well, y'all do that. And when you see the pod on your timeline, just hit the share button. Just hit the share button.
I'm being messy right after Valentine's Day. Imagine that.
I mean, because it went off as planned. You know, when it goes off without a hitch, you could just...
You know, we count these W's any way we can, okay?
And then one thing about it, Nikki, when you hit so many in a row, you got to do a heat check. So what you doing right now is heat check.
That's just trim track. I already feel the heat coming in from my cell right now. Five. You know, but let's focus on the positives.
Let's do that.
Valentine's Day, Sam. How was the weekend for you?
As you know, I got my second vaccine shot. And for all you naysayers out there, white people got their vaccine shot with me. So I don't think there's a Tuskegee Airmen experiment going on. So I did get my vaccine shot. So that kind of left me a little drowsy. I think he checked on me. I think one of those days.
Just one of those days to make sure you was, you know, still with us.
Well, I knew you was busy for Valentine's Day, so I understood. But no, I had a good Valentine's Day. I actually got a gift. Let me grab this gift.
Let's see.
I got a gift for Valentine's Day, as you see.
Oh,
here.
Fancy.
Yeah, a little fancy little gravity shaker. You know what I'm saying?
Good.
Yeah. So yeah, I had a little gift situation going on there. I'm really happy about that. Got a couple of gift cards. I was happy about that also. So moms came through, aunties came through, everybody came through. And I made it great. I got my mom something. She was very happy. Well, I sent it from chance, of course, because I don't like people to think that I'm giving away money and shit. So I'm like, sorry.
Right.
If you got something for me, it came from chance.
There it is.
What about you? How did the weekend,
you know, it was a
how
good
did it
weekend.
Unfold?
It was a great weekend. I enjoyed myself thoroughly.
You know. You know, Nikki, I got to be real with you, right? Because I pay attention to trends, right? And you was very low key on Friday, Saturday, but Sunday you seemed free. And I thought to myself,
what were you thinking to yourself? Yourself said, huh?
I thought to myself, as I was laying on my deathbed with my vaccine shot, I said, Did Nikki put everybody on a Friday, Saturday itinerary and leave the Sunday open so nobody would think they was number one?
You better know the doll, okay? Know the girl. You better know me, okay?
That's what I thought to myself. I said, you and better know me. And I looked to myself and I said, self, that is genius.
You better know me. But I spent some good time with, you know, the offspring. You know, I tried to do some of the same things my parents did on certain holidays. You know, my dad every year would always get me something or take me out or, you know, whatever the case may be. And he didn't let me down this year.
I'm sure daddy didn't.
Daddy didn't. Daddy or Zaddy. Okay, let me get back right. To the topic. My biological father, Daddy, you know, did a great job. You know, it was a great weekend. Got to get some rest, got to actually get out. You know, even spend some time with friends and I got a really cute wine bottle. If you were on my social media, you saw what I posted. But it was definitely a good weekend. I got some of the things that were on my wish list and, you know, we just, like I said earlier, we got to count all these dubs when we can. So
hey, one thing about me, I don't hate the player and I don't even hate the game.
You know, the game is the game.
It is the game.
One of the things I was able to do getting into to today's topic was yesterday when I had some downtime. Like you alluded to, Sam, we were going to review Judas and the Black Messiah. So I got a chance to get two spins of that yesterday. So I watched it once, you know, just to kind of watch it, right? Mm-hmm. But then I watched it for the second time for context. And, you know, for today's show, we want to jump into a couple of different things, such as, you know, our initial thoughts on the movie, some of our favorite scenes, you know, how the characters brought the story to life. In what resonated with us the most, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm gonna kick it over to you. I want to hear some of your thoughts about, you know, the movie and give me some feedback as to, you know, how you think it was portrayed.
Okay, I'm gonna be honest with everybody here. I did not know a lot about Fred Hampton. I had been meaning to buy his book. I kept forgetting about a book. Which I actually have it now. I bought it. It should be coming in today now because I'm gonna read it. They told the story through three perspectives, which was Fred Hampton, of course, the Judas, which is I don't forget the guy's name. That's how much I didn't like him. Yeah, Bill O'Neill. I hated Bill O'Neill. And they told it through his wife's story also. So
the girlfriend Deborah Johnson,
yes. So my initial thoughts was, why is free healthcare, free education, is at the like very core, even in Reconstruction, it was the very core of Reconstruction, if you remember, when you go back and read it, how important it was for Black people to create free school, free healthcare at the end of slavery. That was like a sticking point. And here is Fred Hampton making this sticking point again. And the thing about that sticking point is it's so universal. It doesn't really touch a color, a creed, or anything. It touches everything. It touches everybody at the same time. But why is it the government has such a problem with that one basic necessity that everybody wants? Why is that the one thing that says, hold up, what the hell is going on here? Why does that make people so angry?
Like, the easiest way to kill people is to deny them health care, right?
Right. It really is. And you think about education. I was listening to an interview with Fred Hampton. This guy was telling Fred Hampton he wanted to bring credit unions. He wanted the Black Panthers to invest in credit unions, bring credit unions to the South Side of Chicago. This is an interview on YouTube. I should link it to the show. I'll try if I can. And Fred Hampton said, what's the point of Black people borrowing money if they don't know what to do with it? Like, and he was telling this guy, he said, it's about education. We don't need to leave an oppressor to go to a Black oppressor, right? So he is preaching this ideal of be educated enough to not create an oppressor. And that message that he was saying in this story just resonated with me. I mean, we're going to get to resonator, but my initial thoughts was that is such a transcendent topic that's been going on since the end of slavery. And the thing that he hit on that really touched me was he kept saying the word all brothers and sisters, a coalition of people. And I don't know why that's so scary to everybody. Like, I just don't understand that, man. That hurt me because you see him bringing these Puerto Ricans, these white people, these black people, these gangs. And you can draw a direct correlation from the violence that stems in Chicago right now to this day, back to the day that Fred Hampton died. Because when you kill a figure that big with that much charisma, that much hope in him, you kill the hope in that community. You kill the hope. You kill any, like, they're basically saying, all you want to allow us to be is criminals. You won't right. allow us to be anything more. And
you
that
strip them, you strip people from any type of liberty.
Dignity. You take all their dignity away by taking a figure like that, because all he wanted to do is feed the kids. All he wanted to do is create education and healthcare. And that's, you know, that was the main point I took from the movie.
Yeah, I agree. So going in, you know, it's always kind of, I would say, iffy, right? When you're going into a movie and you pretty much already know how it's going to end. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things of, you know, you want to get a good idea of what angle they came from. And I already knew that it wasn't going to be a Fred Hampton biopic because it says Judas in the Black Messiah. It doesn't say the Black Messiah, right?
Right.
You know, and I just love the fact that the casting, right? I feel that the casting, even though they were older than the actual characters and individuals that they were playing,
right.
You know, it's realistic because I, you know, jokingly we say that, you know, when we look at people from 1960s and 1970s, they all look much older than what they are, right?
Absolutely.
You get a picture of Bill Russell playing and he literally looks like he's 40 years old, but he's like a 22 year old out there just, you know, wheeling and dealing. But
I mean, but doesn't that speak to the idea that in the Black community that we grow up a lot faster?
Like, yeah, I think that definitely does, you know, play a role in it as well. I have always been, you know, such a fan of the Black Panthers, right? I looked at it through, you know, multiple lenses because growing up with, you know, my grandparents who have seen the colored only fountains and the white only restaurants and things like that, you know, they were very, very clear about teaching me about segregation and post-segregation and different things like that. You know, they went to the all-Black high schools. They had the mm-hmm. all-Black proms and, you know, you just trying to get a job or into the workforce was, you know, strenuous, even with their education. And, right. you know, seeing films like this always brings me back to those conversations or those points I've had with my elders. But to the point of the movie, it depicted the time of literally 1 year.
Yeah.
The scope of this movie is only over 1 year. Yeah. And I think they did such a good job of layering all the different themes, all the different things that were happening at the time with sharing, you know, how the government continues to find ways to tear down Black infrastructures and, you know, Black organizations, right? Because
well, let's say this, they find a way to tear down community.
Yeah. Right?
They
yeah.
find a way to insert themselves in community and take community away and make themselves the autonomy over what a community should and shouldn't have.
Right. You know, yeah. It comes back to the dictatorship, right? It comes mm-hmm. back to, you know, stripping people of things, because if they know their power, they know their worth, if they unify and do these things, then, you know, there's not a chance in hell that they're going to be able to survive, right? Because they know that if Black people are able to unify and be able to do these things for themselves, you know, they're going to we'll understand our true power here, right? So
right.
The whole thing around the movie was protection through survival programs, right? Whether it was jobs, medical care, you know, education, things like that, how to, you know, the the meal plan, the meal program was set up basically so kids could have a stomach. Right. I'm sorry. Excuse me. So kids would be able to have something on their stomach so they're not in school worrying about being hungry or worrying about having to leave school in order to find a way to steal it or to, you know, find money to even to have something.
Right. Because when you take hunger away from somebody, then you take desperation away from them.
Right.
The you same know what I'm saying? Thing so that's important.
Right.
To like make that distinction.
Income, right. Like the universal right. income. People are relieved. You know, it's. There's a lot of stress that could be left off of your, you know, off of your plate and in your life if they get an extra $1,000 a month, right? If I know I got a guaranteed X amount of dollars coming in every month, you know, I'm able to move a little different, but we'll get back to that. But, you know, I think they started off with the footage from Eyes on the Prize 2 with Bill O'Neill basically saying, hey, you could see the hesitation in his face. And as they go on to tell the story, you know, where he was posing as an officer in order to steal cars. And, you know, there's so many people who have been in that same situation, right? He was, I think, 17 or 19 years old when he was actually, you know, asked to be that, to be the informant. Well, not asked, I guess, basically backed into a corner to be the informant. And, you know, at that age, it's like 5 years, you're thinking of, you know, it's going to be forever. So you take the lesser evil in your mind, right? And, wow. The one thing that Bill O'Neill did was he saw himself in that FBI agent, right? Because remember, he was admiring him. He was like, you know, how much money do you make? And you drink like this and eat like this all the time.
So,
like,
let's get to that because I'm sorry I cut you off, but I want to talk about that because what that person is a coon. And I'm not saying that to be like derogatory. No, I'm really not trying to say that to be derogatory because in the Black community, what we have a lot of times is coons. It's a lot of coons. And they're very simple characteristics of coons. These, like, coons really believe that the only way that you can obtain wealth or any type of money or any type of status is from a white person.
Yeah.
They believe this. And they also believe that it only can be limited to a finite amount of Black people, right? Like, if I get the money from a white person, then can't nobody else get the money either, right? Because if they give me the money, they give it to somebody else, they mean I can't get none either. So, and that's what Lakeith Stanfield did a great job portraying this because he's very hesitant about what he's doing. Like, he know it's wrong, but he's like, well, shit, I mean, I'm going to get mines, though.
Right.
And I'm going to get mines. And
right, to the point where he even made it more profitable, right? Like, right. If I get you more information, you're going to pay me more, right?
But you know what? What's crazy is the Black Panthers was getting money from banks. They was getting money from restaurants. They was getting food from other places. Like, Fred Hampton was opening up doors for them all across Chicago. So why did he not believe that he could go to Fred to get the things that he
felt? Well, they didn't have a pre-existing relationship, right? He only
right.
came into the fold because he was forced to, right? So it's
but like, who was he in the first scene, though? Who was he taking from? Who was he stealing from?
He was stealing from Black people, right? Because he was still in the car, right?
Right. So he showed you in that first scene that they don't deserve this. I deserve this. They're so dumb, I can take it from them. And this is how most coons think. They think they can outsmart the other Black person. And I'm going to tell you something. And this is just me being as honest as I can be. I tell Black people this shit all the time. I can accept the fact that white people have race ignorance, but what I cannot accept is you telling me what they do is okay and that you're going to circumvent your own people to get to the top. That bothers me in a very tough way. And I thought they did a great job portraying that. I thought they did a great job portraying that. I really did. Because I think if you watch that over and over and over again, you'll see that person's at your job. That person's in your family. You know what I'm saying? That person exists. And that dude is not some villain. And I'm glad he's dead because that person exists. He exists in everyday walk of life.
Yeah, you know, I don't wish death on anybody. I get what you're saying. Like, I'm not oblivious to it. I'm just saying, you know, and it's hurtful. And I think that his suicide was most, in my assumption, would be due to a lot of the things he had to confront when he did that documentary, right? for him to commit suicide the same day it was released on PBS, like that tells me a lot that guilt was weighing on him for years, right?
Well, you know what it was though. He realized that at the end of the day, guess who he wasn't? He wasn't an FBI agent,
right?
At the end of the day, you know who you was? You was just as you was nothing.
No, you served your purpose, right?
Yeah, served your purpose, and nobody cares about you, and that's that. And now you're trying to free your soul of what you've done, because you set Chicago back centuries. You set them back decades. Like, that place is in, and I don't think Chicago's in ruins. But
no, I go often. Chicago's still a beautiful city.
Right, but the portrayal of Chicago is they portray it as like it's in ruins.
You know?
And it's not right that they do that. But yeah, this is gonna be a long conversation.
I think we'll be able to still hit our parameters, and I'll still give you some time left to your evening. But you know, ultimately the timeline is this movie is just spanning over one year, maybe let's call it 18 months, even, right?
Right.
Because in November of 68, Fred Hampton actually joined the Black Panther Party, the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. You know, and just to provide some additional context, in February of 65. Malcolm X was assassinated. In April of 68, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And at that point, that's where I believe you shared this nugget as well, where Fred Hampton transitioned from the NAACP and transitioned to the Black Panther Party and started, you know, being able to see where he would be able to make more of an impact, even if it was considered radical. At this same time, you know, years before Fred Hampton even
that is crazy though, that a radical conversation is free healthcare and free education.
Socialism, right?
Right. That's crazy.
So during this time, you know, the FBI ran by J. Edgar Hoover, played by Martin Sheen in the movie, you know, was running COINTELPRO, which is the counterintelligence program that surveilled Black leaders, Black organizations, which basically was established to dismantle any type of organization from or being united from the Black race front, right?
Oh, let me I want to stop you real quick. I'm sorry. So J. Edgar Hoover grew up in America at a time where America was creating a lot of factions within it. Okay. Now, do I believe he did not like Black people? Yes, I do believe that. But at the time that he was coming up in America, there was lots of factions like Italian mafias, Irish mafias. He didn't believe in the idea that there was a voice that should be bigger than the presidents of the United States. That was J. Edgar Hoover. That's what he believed in. And he did a lot of deporting people. He deported a lot of people, like women rights activists. He deported them out of the country. J. Edgar Hoover got rid of a lot of, like, I'm going to be honest with you. I think if J. Edgar Hoover was alive today, Donald Trump would have been out of the country. Like, I really do believe that. Like, just point blank period. He'd end up, you know, something to happen. But J. Edgar Hoover was, he only believed in one voice that got behind one USA, go USA banner. And that was him to the core. The rise of a Black Messiah, I think, honestly scared the living shit out of him.
well, it did, right? Because that's why they had to do all the surveillance on, you know, Elijah Muhammad, on Malcolm X, on Martin Luther King, and, you know, the different civil rights leaders that were prominent during that time were under major surveillance, right? So his whole goal was, you know, how do I rid the rise of a messiah, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, he literally said, we cannot afford the rise of a Black messiah, because he felt like, oh my God, we got rid of two and we got to do this again,
right?
Right. You know, and part of COINTELPRO, there were incentives, right? So if you were to have some of the Black leaders arrested, you got incentives. Of course, these things are off record. You know, if you were, even if you killed them, you had certain, there were bounties on different leaders' heads. So, you know, there was incentive for the FBI to carry out, you know, these different things that J. Edgar Hoover was putting out there. So I just think that in the run of a year, they were able to cover so much of the context of this. And, you know, shout out to Dominique Fishback. She's my parents' goddaughter. And she was also starring next to Jamie Foxx in that movie Power that was released on Netflix earlier. Earlier this year.
Yeah. She actually filmed both of those at the same time.
She did. She did retakes for Power. Within a month, she was going back and forth between Power and Judas and the Black Messiah. So, you know, she was able to channel both of these characters really, really well. But the thing that really captivated me was, you know, or resonated with me the most is that this young man at, you know, 21 years old, you know, the depths of who he was as a human and as a person and understanding, you know, what he wanted to accomplish and what he wanted to do for Black people and understanding that the cause was greater than him. The you know, the benefits to Black people were more than, you know, just on, more than just even his life. Mm-hmm. You know, he was willing to die for it, right? He was willing to die for the cause and he did not hold back. You know, he knew his rights. He knew what his authority was, and he was not scared to stand in that. Even in Chicago, going up against, you know, other racists and going up against the gangs and trying to unite them in an effort to advance the community, you know, at that time was one of the most dangerous things that he could have done. And because he believed so much in the power of the Black Panther Party, he just forged ahead and was willing to do that. I think another thing that the movie, another part that resonates with me is that outside of the depth of what Fred Hampton was trying to accomplish, you know, seeing the brutal violence, the brutal abuse, because you hear about it, you see the black and whites, you see the old historic footage of, you know, Black people being beat and clubbed and things like that. I don't think we really understand the magnitude of how people were burned and people were, you know, literally beat to a pulp. And you know, there was a lot of that happening, and for people to survive that, I only think of how that impacts them physically, mentally, you know, to get up every day and to know that this may be the day you may die because you're trying to fight for the freedoms of your people. You're trying to fight for your community. You want a place to live. You want a place to work. You just want to feed your family, and you want to be able to do that without being marginalized, or you want to do that without being persecuted because you were born, you know, African-American, you were born Black. And just watching the movie, there's so many ranges of emotions because you're like, wow, this is so powerful. And, you know, what if we could, you know, mobilize and organize and do this now? And then you see the physical violence, and then it takes you back to, you know, all the names that we've spoken over the last years of police violence, of killing, you know, unarmed Black people. And, you know, the same things that were happening years and years ago, as we mentioned on our show, is continuing to happen in present day. Mm-hmm. And you're watching the movie and it's just like, you know, you just really, really, you know, you hurt, you get angry, you get upset. And then to realize that you're fighting against, you know, the oppressor, and you're also fighting against your own people.
Right.
Right.
And that's the trick, right? Like, my granddad told me that when he was growing up, my great grandma, his grandma, had a juke joint. She ran a juke joint where she ran numbers and sold illegal alcohol. And he said he got arrested. He said in his lifetime, he said he probably been arrested 40, 50 times, I think he told me. So it was nothing to be randomly picked up on a Friday, beat up, and thrown into a jail cell until like Monday.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this is like a random, this is like his life from 12 years old to 25.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So he would tell you these stories and you would be like, granted, that's crazy. Like, that was a crazy. But when you
my pops would tell me stories about, you know, how they had to consistently change their route walking home from school. Right. Yeah. You live in a Black neighborhood. You go to a Black high school, right? All Black high school. Mm-hmm. Right. And you're just trying to walk home, and you have to think of different ways to walk home to avoid running into police.
And they had to move in groups. They had to move in groups.
There was nobody walking by themselves. Right. Nobody was allowed to go home. And if they played sports, the whole community showed up, right? So they have, my pops told me that they had bulletin boards, you know, in the neighborhood where you would literally be able to go by and see the schedule for any sport that was happening. So that way they could come out in numbers And, you know, not have to worry about any issues, right? They felt protected, that sense of community, right?
Right.
Same thing that the Panthers were trying to provide in the different chapters over, over the country. But, you know, I say that overall the movie, you know, is good. I enjoyed it. I felt like Daniel Kulaya, he did a great job of embodying Fred Hampton, because, you know, that Louisiana Creole accent, no matter where you at, is going to come out. You know, him being a Black Brit and being able to, you know, even carry the tone, the cadence, the body language, everything of Fred Hampton, he did a great job.
Man, that speech he gave, man, that when he came back from jail. Oh my God. I got goosebumps watching that. I got goosebumps. Yeah. And I rewatched it again though, when to actually listen to Fred Hampton say the speech. And I'm not gonna say their cadence was the same, but it wasn't very far off. Their cadence wasn't very far off. So he killed that. I mean, he killed it. And the way they showed him when he got out of jail as his larger than life figure. It was like the way they filmed that, him walking up the stairs, that cinematography was amazing. It was amazing.
One aside, I do love the lighting. Whenever I see Black people in good lighting, I love it. That's one of the things I love about having Black writers, right? Yeah. Black cinematographers, Black screenwriters. I love having people who do, you know, Black hair, Black makeup, Black light, you know, just the sets, right? They know how to make sure that Black people look normal.
Yeah.
Right. And in the best light. They're not, you know, heavy on the dark makeup just because they're Black, right? The neck matches the face as us.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And right? that scene, when you watch that scene, we'll get to this part, but when you watch that scene, you notice his wife, his girlfriend, in that scene, she drops a couple of tears, right? Because in that moment, she realizes something that nobody else will see. They'll welcome him home, but she knows his fate in that scene. She sees his fate in that scene, and you see the teardrop. And later in that movie, you see that she doesn't cry at all.
Yeah, it was expected.
Because she already knew where he was going after that scene. And I thought they did. I thought Dominique Fishback did an excellent job. So let's get to the next one. That was
Go ahead. Just go ahead to the speech part.
Well, no, I was my favorite scene in the whole. In my favorite scene actually is, and it resonated with me as far as a Black man, was when he asked her, "Why are you afraid of being a mother?" When he's reading her poetry, he's reading her writings, and she comes in, and this is something that I think as Black men, as we try to redefine our roles within the hierarchy of these gender roles and all these things that. If we want women if we want to be leaders in our households and leaders as men, we have to give people a reason to follow us. And in that scene, he asked her a question. And before he could put down what she was about to say, he listened to her, he heard her. And she told him, she said, "You talking about dying when I have a baby in me? You talking about doing this for the people? Well, these are my fears." And I thought that scene really resonated, because every scene they had together was so intimate that you would miss it if you didn't pay attention to it. And as men, we have to find something that a woman can believe in, that our families can believe in, and that can get people to follow us. A lot of times we want people to bow to something, but we have nothing to make them bow to. We have nothing to make them follow. And even though he's this galvanizing figure, you realize that he respected her in a way to give her all the space in the world to share her thoughts, her feelings, her concerns with him. And she also helped him become a better speaker. So I thought every scene with Dominique Fishback and Daniel was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah, you know, just the charismatic of Fred Hampton, the charisma of Fred Hampton, right? I think, you know, was portrayed in the movie. They showed him as the revolutionary, right? The mm-hmm. the engaged speaker, and then they showed him, you know, as the partner, right, to his girlfriend, and, you know, not even knowing she was pregnant, right? Yeah. To the point of where he just had the gift of speaking life into people and getting, you know, there being some unity, right? Even where he opened up the, I think the scene where, you know, Bill O'Neill is actually in the orientation and there, and they're having the discussions, and Bill's trying to holler at the girl, and, you know, Fred's like, hey, you know, we respect the Black women in here. We don't, you know, we don't interact in that way here, right? You know, we're here for the mission and for the purpose and for the cause. And, you know, basically that's what my parents like to call the rebuke, right? That rebuke is to get that fear out of you, right? So if you've been called out on the spot of doing something where it's not aligning with the purpose, right? There's some type of discipline that comes with it, you know? So,
but the idea that you cannot hate the oppressor and then become an oppressee. You can't be oppressing people if you hate the oppressor. Like, you can't have it both ways. I know we mean you discussed this, but that was something that I thought came through also as he was talking to Bill O'Neill in that scene. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think they did a good job of just capturing the whole, you know. I hate to say it, but they capture the short lifespan or that certain part of
it's crazy that he was only 21 with that much forethought, right? That's insane.
Yeah, because you got to understand there's movements happening all over, because this is happening at the same time as the trial of the Chicago Seven, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, Bobby Seale and a couple of the other liberals are all involved. And quietly in that Chicago Seven case, Bobby Seale had nothing to do with it, right? They just route him in on some trumped up charges again that the FBI found out, or the FBI created, in order to try to pin, you know, the deaths of that particular protest onto Bobby and to those gentlemen. And, you know, if you haven't seen it, please go check it out. It's on Netflix. It's called Chicago 7. Really good movie. But long story short, you know, they're intertwining all these different things that are happening all over the country, right? For Black
America, America is
things, and as they're making mention of those things, you can kind of tie in how all of this is even impacting every chapter of the Black Panther Party, even if it's not in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, like, the American experiment is happening, and America is teetering at this point in time. And it's crazy to think about that, because that's just 1968. That's not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I always tell people, like, we can get this figured out because we're a young country. We can get all this figured out. It's not that crazy.
Right. Yeah. So to bring it home, Fred Hampton is assassinated, murdered in his home. You know, I think the most gruesome death of a Black leader and activist. I know that, you know, Malcolm was shot in the mosque. I know that Martin Luther King was gunned down on the balcony and things like that. But the amount of bullets that were sprayed into, you know, their home, it kind of just sent me right to Breonna Taylor, right? Like, mm-hmm. All the gunshots that were shot into her apartment by those police officers. It just, those two things just happened in my mind at the same time, where as they said that there were over 100 bullets and they were only able to trace one bullet from one of the members of the Black Panther Party who was there, who was home. Right. And, you know, that was, you know, just sad. It was pathetic. It was, you know, totally
cowardly.
Just malicious, just, you know, asinine. I mean, just, I can't find enough words to describe, you know, what the government did in order to, you know, keep the power that they have in order to advance their own, you know, crazy mindset of, excuse me, of white power and white supremacy. They were willing to, you know, take a father, a son, you know, from a leader, you know, from their community. Yeah. You know, yeah. I always say parents shouldn't have to bury their children. Mm-hmm. You know, so for his mom to have to bury him, for him to not even be able to meet or know his son, you know, just different things, because it makes you think of where we could have been had he lived. But, you know,
yeah. I mean,
I'll summarize it from my point. You know, I enjoyed the movie thoroughly. I feel that, you know, they covered a lot in that one year. You know, I would definitely watch it for a third or fourth time.
I mean, it's gonna be on my list to watch, especially during Black History Month. I'll be watching that the 13th. When they see us, it goes on the list with those.
Yeah, I can't watch When They See Us again.
I my son will watch When They See Us. Like, that's gonna happen. Like, he will watch it every year. I mean, because the just these structures and these, man, I tell you, man, it's crazy, man. As we watch the world as it is, like, as it's happening around us, man, it's insane. Like, you think, like, damn, dude. I always think to myself, like, damn, I'm so lucky. Like, these situations are not that far away from you. Like, they're around.
Not that far removed.
Yeah, you're not that far removed, and this is all possible, man. This stuff is all possible. It all can happen to you, and you're just lucky that you wasn't involved in that, you know. And the Black Panther Party and Fred Hampton, Huey P. Newton, these figures, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, you know, instead of, it makes you think, like, do we value community enough? And I see why we don't, because they've taught us that when we do, they destroy it. Because, I mean, you look at what Nipsey Hussle was doing, you know, and I'm not saying the government killed Nipsey Hussle. I don't know that. That's a conspiracy. I don't know. But it just feels weird because you see somebody that's creating this cash flow within a community, a ghetto, so-called ghetto. He's filming all his videos in this so-called ghetto. He's employing all these ex-cons, employing all these people from his community. And why would he die? Like, that makes no sense to you. It makes no sense, you know? And it's just one of those things where you wonder in your community, like, how much can you do in your community that doesn't involve the government, and how long can it last? You know, and it's just it's a sad thing, man. It's very sad, you know, because I think community should be at the forefront of what we do in this country. I don't think it should be in the back. I don't think we should be asking the government for stimulus checks and ask the government for, you know, I see guys like Big Game James and Rob Deloach, the things they're doing in the community. Look at the Black coaches and Pop Warner coaches on the sidelines in these communities. And that is a big part of what gets, I mean, it's a big part of why I'm sitting here, why I'm sitting here right now. You know, I mean, I don't have a Black Pop Warner coach, David Jones or Eric Andrews. I don't know where I'm at. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know where I'm sitting at right now. So it's crazy, man. It's crazy. It's really insane.
So for the So What's Next portion of the show, we got a glimpse into Judas and the Black Messiah, which lended more of the story towards Judas, Bill O'Neill. But, you know, it gave us a good idea of how, you know, Fred Hampton operated and who he was. So what's next? Who's the next biopic we want to see? What's the next, you know, Black figure that we want to learn more about, that we want to get a better understanding of? Who do we want to see on the screen next?
Oh, man. Give me an Angela Davis bio. Give me an Angela Davis bio. I want it while she's still alive. I told somebody Angela Davis was still alive. They didn't even believe me. They had to go look it up. They're like, you're lying. I'm like, I swear to God, she's still alive. Yeah, I'm like, she's still alive. I swear to God, she's at a protest. So give me Angela Davis. Give me Bobby Rush, the guy that was with Fred Hampton. I think in the movie he had afro. He was like the guy, like, I gotta go home. But he actually became a gosh, man, what did I got it? I got it right here. Hello. He actually became a U.S. House of Representative from 1983 to 93. So give me that. Give me those two biopics.
Yeah, I will say I loved Good Trouble. That was good. A good one. A new one with John Lewis. The new one, if I had to get a new one out there, one of my favorite figures is Nikki Giovanni. I've been a huge Nikki Giovanni fan since high school. She was one of the reasons why I even started writing, why I love journaling, why I even tried my hand at poetry, which was not one of my things, but she gave me the courage to at least try it. I would love to hear her stories and, you know, her interactions with H. Rapp Brown and, you know, their son, and, you know, how she was able to still, you know, be vibrant and you know, go through the struggle. And then even, you know, in her years being a professor at Virginia Tech, would love to hear how she, you know, managed her African-American studies class and things like that. I would also love to, Langston Hughes, right? Mm-hmm. I would like to see a modern day biopic of Langston Hughes. I mean, entailing everything from Harlem Renaissance to speech writing to, you know, everything he was involved in or touched. I would love to learn, you know, more about him as a person and not leaving out certain parts, right? Because I think there are certain things that people didn't want to know about or put out there about Langston Hughes because he was such a pivotal figure during that time. But I would love to hear, you know, more about his prominence. I would, I'm going to call him an activist because of the way he was able to get the message out. But, you know, I would love to hear or, you know, see a biopic in the works for Stevie Wonder. And some of the things that he's been able to do as he made the soundtrack to a lot of things that were going on during the struggle, right? You know, for a blind man who can't actually see these things, but to actually experience, you know, racism. I would like to see just how Jamie Foxx did Ray. Would love to see someone do the same thing with Stevie Wonder's story and give us some color and feedback to, you know, his life.
Jamie killed Ray. I think Frederick Douglass would be a good one also. But I want a relationship. I want the biopic to end right before the Civil War ends, though. I don't want it to be into the Civil War. I want it to end before the Civil War ends. Like, I want to see Frederick Douglass be the chess master that he was as far as getting black soldiers to fight, his relationship with Abraham Lincoln. But I want the real relationship. I want the real relationship. I would love to see a Frederick Douglass biopic. I thought they didn't do enough with Harriet Tubman for some reason. I was like, I really wanted more.
I don't want a whitewashed film.
Right, and that's kind of hard because when you add Abraham Lincoln to Frederick Douglass, they're going to whitewash it. So it's kind of
definitely going to have revisionist history there. Right. one thing I can do without for a little while is slave movies. I don't want to see anything from a slavery standpoint. I don't want to see, you know, anything. I want to see movies where we get to understand, you know, anything right around Board v. Education. Let's go from there forward, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I don't want to see, you know, slavery movies just do something to me.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I don't watch, like, I haven't even watched 12 Years a Slave. I haven't watched it. I told my mom I can't do it. I just can't.
Yeah, I will say that if and when you do, just make sure you do it where, you know, you won't be seeing the pilgrims for a couple of days. Space it out a little bit. But so, you know, with that being said, Sam, I know we kind of walked through some things about the Judas and the Black Messiah and what we want to see next. Anything else you want to share before we out of here?
No, man. I encourage, if you haven't watched it, I encourage you to go watch it. I encourage you to read and research on these black figures that existed, that we did learn about in high school and middle school. I encourage you to learn about these figures, man. And shouts out to Daniel and Lakeith Stanfield and Ryan Coogler and Even though I know we hate Jesse Plemons because he's always the white guy that's always problematic to black people in films.
He plays the role too well, man.
He plays it too well, but hey, shouts out to him because somebody got to do it.
Yeah, same here. You know, please watch the movie. I am one of those people that I will always support black content creators, and no matter what medium it's on, I will give it a couple of streams because, you know, we always say representation matters. So we have to watch it whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. So next week, we'll jump into some topics. You know, we are halfway through Black History Month, a little bit over halfway through February. So next week, we're going to kind of, you know, jump into some Black history moments and, you know, cover some other things that we care about today and most likely won't matter tomorrow. But again, can you do us a favor? Hit that subscribe button. Go ahead, leave us a review. When you send out your good morning text in the morning, tomorrow, just please remember to include our link and tell them to listen to the pod. It should brighten up their day and yours as well. But yeah, we out of here.
Because Nick is giving free game. Yo.
Bye.
I've been wide awake for about a month now, rounding it up. Mama done told me none of easy, like, boy, get your ass up. Chewing up, I put in the work now, blessings counting up. Look at them haters frowning up, so I flex to rile them up. Hey, look at my boss, bending the cars, check my flaws. You can ignore, come to the house, give you a tour. Take your shoes and dirt on my floor. I love the taste, ooh, good. She want them more, she want them more. I love the rain, the blessings coming in pour. I spent the bag on a bundle. Turn around and take a flip and make it double. Listen, baby, with me, you ain't ever gotta struggle.